Fasten your seatbelts, friends. Today, we are going to talk about depositions and diversions in a David versus Goliath lawsuit with our friend Scott Shera of OurAmazingGrace.net. An update on this suit coming up next.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
All right, friends, we have had Scott in the studio, by the way, welcome, for many, many times to talk about this amazing case, about Amazing Grace, really. But for those of you that don't know the story, I know we have a lot of newer listeners and viewers, so we'll get into the nuts and bolts of this, but it's a massive lawsuit. And I don't think anybody else has done this or gotten this far, but it's definitely David versus Goliath. I want to bring in Scott Shera. He'll explain that to you. Brother, so good to see you. Welcome to Worldview Matters.
Well, it is fantastic to see you again, David. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we were just talking before we started, and you're already $400,000 in to this lawsuit with court fees and attorney's fees, and it is astounding to the average person watching or listening that we have to go through something like this, what you're going through, to get justice. And I know it's not just justice that you want, but repentance from those in the medical establishment, the medical industry, the hospital industry, nurses, doctors who went along with COVID protocols and knowing that they weren't helping, but they were in fact hurting people. So overall, your view on that and where we're at to just explain to people what's going on and why you're fighting this battle.
Well, we're fighting the battle because we were made for a time such as this. I mean, when I look back at our history and what gifts God gave me and all the things that he lined up ahead of time, I mean, how can you turn it down? So that's what we're fighting. You know, the idea of justice, the Antichrist legal system, which we're in, this is a civil case for wrongful death. You will never get justice. The end game with any civil case is they write a check. So there would not be a check big enough for my daughter's murder.
To bring Grace back.
Correct.
Your daughter, Grace, 19 years old, she had Down syndrome. She had COVID. She was in the hospital in Appleton, Wisconsin. And just share the nuts and bolts of the who, what, where, when, and then why are you doing this?
So Grace was 19. She had Down syndrome. Her first day in heaven was October 13th of 2021. The short story relative to the hospital stay is they euthanized Grace, and they euthanized her with a combination of meds, Presidex, lorazepam, and morphine. And the Presidex was over a five-day period. But then what they did in her last day on this earth, they added lorazepam and morphine to the Presidex mix. So her body was a syringe. And in a 29-minute window, they combined all those meds, and she was gone shortly thereafter. When it came time to revive Grace, the medical staff refused to even come in the room. And the reason, their excuse was, the doctor put a do not resuscitate order on Grace. Of course, we now have the medical records. We learned of the DNR that night as we're screaming to save our daughter, and they hollered back, she's DNR. And they used that as their excuse to never even step foot in the room. So we watched Grace die on a FaceTime call while our daughter Jessica was in the room with Grace. So those become two of the major pieces of our claim, our wrongful death claim. Obviously, the illegal DNR, the med combination to euthanize her. But we have many, many other claims. You know, so to frame the lawsuit, David, we filed on April 11th of 2023. In order to file a lawsuit, of course, you have to have the records. You have to have a medical professional go through the records to make sure that there are claims. That's a very important piece. So our claims, of course, we have wrongful death. We have medical malpractice, which means the doctors violated what's called the standard of care.
Yes.
I'm going to come back to that.
Okay.
And, of course, the doctors violated informed consent. So informed consent means they're supposed to inform you as to the good, bad, ugly, pros, cons of everything they're doing, and then you give your consent. Of course, we didn't have consent at all to the med combination, the DNR, just about everything in the hospital. Then the fourth claim that we have is a battery. And the reason we have a battery claim, lack of informed consent is a battery. But because in Wisconsin, the creative defense attorneys have put that underneath medical malpractice, we have a separate claim for battery. So the difference between battery and informed consent is informed consent means they didn't tell you the whole truth. Battery means they didn't tell you anything. Hmm. And that's what happened in Grace's case. And then the last leg of that stool is we have a declaratory judgment for the illegal DNR and the med combination. The standard of care thing, I'll just hit on that.
Sure.
So what happens, and I'll just be blunt, during the COVID era, most people who died in hospitals were given either remdesivir or put on a ventilator mm-hmm. or a combination of those two. Yeah. This happened to 1.2 million Americans during that 39-month era.
Wow.
All right, so Grace was one of 1.2 million. If we would have authorized a ventilator, Grace would not have died on October 13th. She would have died 22 days later. So Grace never needed a ventilator, but they wanted us to authorize it just in case. Mm. And they said these type of things tend to happen in the middle of the night when you can't get a hold of the family. So we never authorized that. If we would have authorized a ventilator, we would not have a lawsuit because the ventilator was the standard of care. So if they follow the standard of care, they have immunity from liability. Because Grace died the way she did, and we were in the room. I was in the room from the 6th of October through the 10th, mm-hmm. taken out by an armed guard, as you know. Jessica came in to replace me after 47 hours without an advocate. So we saw what was happening,
yes.
and we documented it. Oh. That's why we have a lawsuit.
There's so much to learn from your story, and part of it is everyone needs an advocate when they're in the hospital, when there's a patient in the hospital. And there's so many other things, too. First of all, the combination of those three meds, if you want to call them meds, that substances that were administered to Grace, you have talked about the package inserts clearly labeled with warnings that there are certain things you should not combine. So those three things should never, am I overstating by saying they should never be used together in that combination?
The package insert for morphine specifically says, if you do combine those meds, keep the reversal drug bedside and actively monitor the patient.
Wow.
That's how deadly that combination is. This is what you use to euthanize somebody in their last hour of hospice care.
Wow. And there was no reversal drug even there available.
Nothing.
Not only was it not there, but they couldn't, or they wouldn't come into the room because of the DNR. Now, that's another thing that people are upset just hearing this, that you did not authorize the do not resuscitate, but the doctor put that on Grace. How does this happen?
Well, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I'm going to read a couple of things
sure.
because it will blow you away as to how it happens. So when you hear... So I filed a complaint with the medical examining board relative to what happened to Grace. And actually, I'm going to bring the actual quotes up after the break. But
okay.
I filed a complaint with the medical examining board. They wrote back and said, Chapter 154 of the Wisconsin statutes, which is the DNR statute, does not apply to doctors in a hospital setting. So think through what they're saying. A doctor can write a DNR on anybody that he wants. So you think, how is this even possible?
Right.
All right. So how it's possible is there's the public health policy should be called the public death policy. And the reason is because they are under the impression that we have limited resources, so we have to ration care.
Mm-hmm.
This is why Medicare and Medicaid was put into existence, to get people on those programs and then write standards of care that literally kill them. Because we have too many people on the planet, we don't have enough resources, we've got to balance the budget. These are all the excuses that the collectivists
wow.
use to train the medical staff.
Wow.
I'll end up reading the quote from the district attorney's office because this will blow people away. But there's something that I just learned last Saturday relative to this, and it's bigger than the DNR.
Okay.
Most people would believe, so just think about you go into a hospital, you or your wife go into a hospital, you would automatically assume the hospital has a responsibility to call the husband or wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Wisconsin is not a next of kin state. So there's, so I found the map for the whole country. There's several states that are next of kin state where the hospital has a responsibility to contact the next of kin. Okay. Wisconsin, in this case, is not a next of kin state. That means if you do not have your paperwork together, your power of attorney for health care together, the hospital takes over decision making.
Oh, my goodness.
That's big news. I haven't reported this at any place yet. This is the first thing.
So this is breaking. A lot of states have this where there's this assumption that the hospital has to call someone from the family or next of kin. Yeah. But that's not the case across the country.
That's correct.
That's what you're saying. Wow.
And I'll be publishing the link so people can find their own state. But I'm just not. It's brand new. I mean, I just found this out on Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. What a journey you're on, brother. By the way, friends, I didn't give the site ouramazinggrace.net. Ouramazinggrace.net. Couple more minutes before we take our brief pause, Scott Shera. And you are in the deposition stage of the lawsuit. You've been through all these depositions, and you've learned a lot, and it must be tedious. And I saw the ones with Jess, to your daughter, and it's hard to watch, knowing just how hard it was for her to go back to those moments. So could you share a couple things about the depositions, because they're over now and you're moving on to, you're waiting to get, what did you call, reports, expert reports?
Yeah, the defense expert report. So to frame the whole thing, we're in what's called discovery right now.
Okay.
So before the next significant dates are May 19th, 20th, and 21st. There's a three-day hearing in Outagamie County Court for the defense to present their argument for summary judgment to throw the whole case out. So that's the next piece that's significant. But right now we're in what's called discovery. So in discovery, there's interrogatories, which are questions back and forth. There's depositions, and then there's expert reports and depositions. So we have finished our family depositions. We've deposed all the doctors and nurses. Our experts have been deposed. And on February 10th, the defense has to disclose their experts along with their reports. And then the first expert for the defense deposition is February 13th.
So February 10th, that's when you will know their strategy. Is that, did I understand that right?
Correct. Okay. So because we'll have written reports from all of their experts.
Okay.
And so we'll see what their strategy is. I mean, our strategy is very simple.
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah. You know what amazes me when you hear this in a case like this, when you're talking about wrongful death? It is life and death, and you hear strategy, that word strategy, and it's just so sad that this, we're even using that word when it comes to a situation where someone died, someone lost their life, and it didn't have to happen.
Well, here's why it's another piece of the puzzle why the plaintiff has a, you know, why you call it David and Goliath, which is true. You know, that's our logo.
Yeah.
Well, it is David and Goliath. So you just process what goes on with the jury. So we'll have a 75-person jury pool that will get narrowed down to 12. Mm-hmm. The 12 that are part of the jury, the actual jury, what is their bias? Everybody comes to the table with a bias.
Yep.
And the programming to trust the medical establishment is high. So they're going to come with a bias to trust the medical establishment. So then, as our attorneys have wisely said,
wow,
you know, I look at, we have the truth on our side.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they calm me down regularly. And one of the things they say is, Scott, this is going to be two stories, and you will be surprised at how polished their story is,
mm-hmm,
even though they lie. I mean, I've caught the doctors lying under oath multiple times in these depositions. And I'll share a shocking discovery in the depositions when I'm done explaining this. So they tell me this is two stories. So we've got to present a story. They have to present a story. And ultimately, the jury decides. How do people decide? Perception.
Yeah.
Right? They don't decide based on reality. They decide on perception. So, you know, part of our strategy is, you know, the charting and, you know, all the things to show the jury in simple form why Grace died.
The facts and the details. So get those quotes ready to share when we come back from our break. And friends, so much more, including part of Scott's deposition on faulty equipment. It's really mind-blowing in how the nurse responded. More with Scott Shera on Worldview Matters in just a minute.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. Friends, if you're listening to our show via audio podcast, please help us out by leaving a 5-star review wherever you're at. Apple, Spotify does help the show rise in the rankings, and it's doing very, very well. Praise God, and thanks to you. Also, you can subscribe to our new YouTube channel at Worldview Matters, David Fiorazzo. And also maybe make sure to follow us on Rumble. So Scott Shera is our guest today. So much more that we could get into, lots of details, but everything's available at ouramazinggrace.net. So Scott, before we get to your deposition on the faulty leads and faulty equipment, which was really astounding, but I guess it shouldn't be, right? You wanted to share a quote or two with us.
Yes, yeah, so ahead, I want to share. Yeah, it's funny because I have so many speaking slides on my laptop. Hopefully I can grab this quick, but if I can't, I'll just paraphrase it. Okay. But I did want to share one of the most surprising things I found in the depositions. When our attorneys are questioning the doctors who ordered the meds, specifically Precedex, and so their name is, we have the med order. Their name is on the order, and right. They denied ordering it. Two of the doctors denied even ordering the med.
How could they do that if their name is on it?
It's interesting. I'm releasing depositions one a week as I'm going through them in preparation for the trial. But their excuse is, we work as a team. And so if you just think that through, we're under the perception that a doctor is ordering the med. And what I've learned is the nurses have a lot more authority for these orders than what you think. And then they'll put the doctor's name on it, and then they review it after the fact.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's shocking.
Wow. We've learned a lot. But what you said, it goes back to before the break, what you said about people's perception of the medical industry or establishment of hospitals. And these are private businesses. They're in it they have to make money to survive. People tend to still think that hospitals have the best interests of the patient at heart. Now, some do, and a lot of medical personnel do. So we're not covering everybody with this big blanket here. But what you've learned should open a lot of people's eyes. But as you said, that's part of the battle, is changing perceptions, right?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, even just locally, when people know what we're doing, you know, the general perception is, why don't you get back to working? Why don't you get back to what you were doing? Why are you chasing this? And the reason we're chasing this is because this is our responsibility. This isn't a chase anymore. This is about saving lives. Yes. I mean, you know, our scripture verse that we stand on is Genesis 50:20. What you meant for evil, God meant for good, the saving of many lives. Mm. Grace's death has not been in vain, and this has become our family's mission. So that's what we're called to do.
And I want to emphasize that, friends, just in case you missed it, which most people picked up on it, and I've had you on before. You can't bring grace back, and this isn't to be vindicated or anything like that, but you can save a lot of lives, not you personally, but this suit, if it goes the right way and you guys win the suit, there's going to be some repentance and there's going to be some change and there's going to be some lives saved because of it. But just the fact that you're doing this, Scott, and I know tedious is not really the right word, that just you've been working so hard tirelessly at this and just raising awareness like you have been for several years now, that is helping a lot of people. I'm not sure if you realize that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we realize it locally. Yeah, with the podcast and people writing, but we also have been directly involved with saving lives. I mean, you remember my wife and I saved Robert Pazer's life in November of 22. My wife right now is in Chippewa Falls with a lady that's being an advocate. She saved her life. Literally, she was going to die in July in a Madison hospital, and my wife saved her life. Wow. And, you know, how did we even get involved in these things? Well, it's because of Grace's death. Yeah. I found that quick quote.
Oh,
so what this quote is, just to set this up, we had a different attorney involved to file a criminal claim for Grace's death with the Outagamie County District Attorney. So I'm going to read from that District Attorney's letter. This will shock anybody. When you hear this, you think, is this really true? This is right out of the letter. The District Attorney wrote back in response to the request, a doctor is not required to administer treatment she or he believes is not medically effective. This includes authorizing a DNR. The parties clearly had a dispute about how Dr. Shokhar should treat Grace. Dr. Shokhar did not abide by the wishes of the family. However, there is no law in Wisconsin that requires him to do so.
Let that sink in. However, there shouldn't be a however. He did not abide by the wishes of the family.
So what does that tell you? That's how deep this medical industrial establishment has control of healthcare in our country.
And it's so sad, and it shouldn't be like that in a country like America. But these are the type of battles we need to be aware of, and we're just thank God for you, brother. Thank God that you are fighting this. So now, before we run out of time, part of your deposition that I didn't get a kick out of, but I just hearing you explain again the nurse's response to the pulsometer, oximeter, the leads that were sweaty, and I guess that happens all the time, and they just know they're not always accurate. Explain that, please, and the question and how you responded and what happened.
It's so big, this what I'm going to explain next. And ultimately, this type of thing is why I was escorted out of the hospital, because I was challenging these type of things. They didn't like that. So this was the morning of October 9th.
Okay.
Grace, she gets up. She's telling me she's hungry. She has a mask on. So it's so cute, David, when you think about Grace. So she starts, I can't understand what she's saying because of the mask. So she starts signing. I don't understand sign language. So I remove the mask. Dad, can you order me food? So I order food. I start feeding Grace. Of course, Grace could feed herself, but not with this mask on. And the nurse came running in and said, "You can't do that." I said, "What? What's the reason?" She said, "Well, her oxygen saturation is only at 85%. And so I...
So you can't feed her?
Well, because they wanted to be above 90. And so when you remove the mask, it's dropping the oxygen. I thought, this doesn't make any sense.
Okay. No.
So then after about 5 minutes, I thought, well, Grace is doing great. Her oxygen can't be at 85%. There's no way. So we had a pulse oximeter in the room. So I put it on Grace's finger and it read 95%. So I called the nurse back in and I said, is my meter accurate? And she said, yes, it is. I said, well, why is my $50 meter more accurate than your expensive machine that's reading Grace's oxygen? So just to frame this, she's outside the room looking at this big monitor through the nurse's window.
Right.
Okay. So that's how she knows it's at 85%.
Okay.
And so she says, so when I challenged what's going on, she said, well, the leads get sweaty. I said, well, if that's a known, why aren't you proactively changing out the leads, given this is the major statistic you're using to manage my daughter's care?
Then
she shook her finger at me and said, you should just be thankful you caught this. And, as I've learned, and I've really studied what is going on, they have a vested interest in having the records match the goal. Records in a medical records are called prima facie evidence, means that they are held as true unless you can prove otherwise. So when they underreport things like oxygen and there's a $300,000 payday for a ventilator, connect the dots. So they share with the family or the patient, hey, look, your oxygen is so low. And so then the patient or the family believes, oh, we got to do a ventilator because the oxygen. So they have a vested interest in charting oxygen that's arbitrarily low.
We're running out of time, Scott. Would you please, for those that are not familiar with the payday, the payday with, especially during the COVID, with the COVID protocols?
Well, in COVID, it was the first time the government directly funded protocols. So one of the protocols they funded was ventilators. So during COVID, if you got put on a ventilator for more than 96 hours, it was a $39,000 bonus.
For one person, for one ventilator at one hospital.
At one hospital, right. But it ends up being $300,000 when you extrapolate out the the number of days, the average number of days somebody was on a ventilator before they died, which was 90% of them died, was ends up being about 300,000 with 22 days of pay.
How tragic. So over a million people, that probably more than that, died, and the hospital got a whole lot of money. Each hospital, it just, something is so wrong about that. And a lot of people are out there grieved when they hear these things. And I think a lot of people are surprised if they haven't heard your story before. They're hearing this and probably shaking their head because perception, the hospitals want to help cure us, right? Not always. And if they're following protocols, like a lot of nurses, a lot of whistleblowers have come forward now and said, yeah, I knew these weren't the best things to do for that particular, these patients, but I did it because I didn't want to lose my job. And we've heard these testimonies now.
Absolutely. And the biggest thing I could explain is this really has nothing to do with COVID. COVID exposed it. These standards of care have been around since the early 80s.
Yes.
Medicare, Medicaid started on July 30th, 1965. Standards of care were developed in the 80s. And I explained, I think, on the last show, the standard of care for cancer, everybody knows it, chemo. Chemo has a 97.9% kill rate 5 years and longer. So the people don't survive more than 5 years 97.9% of the time if they go on chemo.
Wow.
And yet that's the standard of care. Yeah. So you see why I call them standards of death.
Okay, we are just down to like a minute and a half. So we'll have to have you back after, was it February 21st? You said?
February 10th.
February 10th. So that's when you get their reports. So you know their quote-unquote strategy.
Their strategy.
And then what's next after that, briefly?
Then we depose all of their experts, so that will be February, March.
Okay.
Then discovery is cut off. Then the defense puts together their motion to dismiss. Then we have a response to the motion of to dismiss, so that's March, April. And then the hearing on the motion to dismiss is May 19th, 20th, 21st.
Wow, some big dates coming up. But brother, thank you. It's hard, you know, talking about this, but I'm thankful that we get to, because I think we are helping a lot of people. You are helping a lot of people, so thank
you.
Well,
so are you. You're the one who is willing to have me on.
One of the first.
One of the first.
Yeah, so guys, ouramazinggrace.net. You can get a lot of information on there. I mean, my goodness, in detail. So go and check that out, ouramazinggrace.net. We'll catch up with Scott probably within a couple months here. And we'll keep up on this. Brother, thank you again.
Thanks for having me, David.
All right, guys. This is important. It's hard to talk about. And this is just one of those things that in America, we've got to kind of change our perspective and tweak our thinking and what we used to think about your government or the hospital, the medical system. But anyway, we've got to run. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.